Well, good evening, or afternoon. I don't know if that was a, could even get a scriptural nap in this afternoon. That was so quick. But nonetheless, we are here and we have come to worship our God in spirit and in truth, for certainly He is worthy of our praise, our adoration, and hopefully we've come to give Him our very best this evening. Again, I want to thank you for the opportunity that you've given myself and Raina and the boys to be up here and participate in this gospel meeting. I want to thank you for your support, not only the financial support which the congregation sends to us each month, but also for your prayers and your encouragement in the work of which we're doing in northern Florida. Tonight I want to ask you, have you ever been discouraged? Sometimes when we think about a question like that, we think about, well, I've never been in a great depression, or I've never been so discouraged where, you know, I've shut myself up at home. But discouragement has different levels. There are times in which we are discouraged and we maintain. We keep on going in life. Maybe not with as much vigor or zeal as what we once did, but we're a little bit lessened. We're a little bit maybe kept to ourselves and what we once were. Or maybe we don't have the attitude, the positivity that we once had. And so tonight I want to talk about the idea, or mention the idea of how to rise above discouragement, because I think all of us at one point or another will be discouraged in one way or the other, and maybe to lesser degrees than others, but nonetheless it seems to come to us all. There's a lot of things that can discourage us. Sometimes things with our health, or with our family, or whatever it may be. Sometimes they cause us to be discouraged or to grow weary. In Galatians chapter 6 and in verse 9, the Apostle Paul is writing to the churches of Galatia and the brethren in this area, and he tells them that he doesn't want them to be discouraged. He understands the work that is before them. He understands the difficulty that is going to be in the very near future, or will continue to be, trying to maintain their Christianity, their walk with their Lord, and he wants them to stay positive. Do not grow weary in the things of which you've been doing. And so in Galatians chapter 6 and in verse 9, he says, "Let us not lose heart in doing good, for in due time we will reap if we do not grow weary." Paul says there's something at the end that's worth maintaining your walk, maintaining the deeds that you're doing. So don't give up. Don't grow weary in those things. If we will not become discouraged, if we will not give up, if we will not give in, then we shall reap. I want to use a common illustration or a common theme in illustrations through this evening's lesson. And I want to begin by telling you about this young Midwestern lawyer. And he suffered from great depression. His depression got so bad that his friends thought it best that if they would go into his home and take away any knives or razors that might be present there. The man begins to question his own life's calling and the prudence of even attempting to follow through. And during this time, he wrote, in his own words, he says, "I am now the most miserable man. Whether I shall ever be better, I cannot tell. I awfully forebode, I shall not." But somehow, from somewhere, this Midwestern lawyer by the name of Abraham Lincoln received the encouragement he needed, and the achievements of his life thoroughly vindicated his bout with discouragement. Many of us have heard some of the stories about Abraham Lincoln, the discouragement, the defeats, the setbacks in life. And yet through it all, he maintains some way he's able to overcome. He's able to press on. And we'll talk a little bit more about him later in the lesson. But at one time or another, I would venture to say that all of us have been discouraged. Maybe family or friends have disappointed us. And that's been a discouragement. We expected more. We thought more of them. Even among some of our brethren, they've disappointed or discouraged us in some way. Maybe we've had problems in our own life that we've failed to overcome, and we've tried and tried. Maybe we feel like we recognize this as a problem in my life. And maybe I even recognize to the point where I realize I've sinned against God, and I've trespassed what He would have me to do. And I've been working on that. And at times I do fairly well, but at times I slip up and I fall. Sometimes those things discourage us. Sometimes our health lets us down. We become sick, or someone close to us becomes sick. And that's discouraging. When our health begins to fail, when there's things that we feel like are still left to be done, good that I can do, and yet I can't do all that I once did. Those things can be areas of discouragement in our lives. I think what we have to realize is that we all face discouragement. We're all humans. And because we are human beings, we all face discouragement. If not, we're not human. It's part of this life. And I think even this evening, as we'll look, we see great men of faith, biblical characters, who at times were discouraged. There's a story told about a time when the devil was so anxious to discourage mankind that he decided that he would send out all of his messengers, all that he could gather up. He would send them out to people. And what he wanted them to do is walk up behind people who are walking briskly, who have purpose in life. And he wanted those messengers to go up and to tell, just whisper in their ear, "You're discouraged." And so time after time, these messengers of Satan would go up behind people. And all they would do is say, "You're discouraged." And that person who is walking briskly with purpose all of a sudden would slow down. They would drop their head. And they would become discouraged. But one man, the messenger, came up behind, and the messenger told him, "You're discouraged." And the man didn't flinch. He continued to walk on. And even with a louder voice, the messenger of Satan says, "You're discouraged." And again, he would not stop. And a third time, the messenger said, "You're discouraged." The man finally stopped, turned around, and told the messenger, "I am not." And the messenger of Satan fled from him. There are many a times where Satan is going to continue to come up behind us, to find ways into our lives to try to discourage us. And we have got to tell him, no, we're not. We have got to fight back against discouragement. There are trials that we face, things in our life that they will either discourage us or they will cause us to become stronger. How will we deal with the discouragements of this life? If it is a problem that we're facing, if it is a friend or a family member that's a source of discouragement, or whatever it may be, are we going to fight back, or will we be like so many who drop their head and walk slowly and feel that they are discouraged? We have to fight back against discouragement. We have to find ways to receive strength in those times. There are times in our lives where probably we can look back and we said, you know, that could have been a great time of discouragement in my life, but I handled it well. I sought encouragement from maybe a brother or sister in Christ, or I turned it over to God. Did we fight back? Or are there times in our life where we look back and we say, you know what, I became discouraged by the littlest thing. And I allowed those things, those trials, those difficulties in life to cause me to stop doing what God would have me to do. In James chapter 1, in verses 2 through 4, James chapter 1 and verses 2, 3, and 4, James writes to these early Christians, and he tells them that there are going to be difficulties, there's going to be trials, there's going to be things that are going to be hard for them to deal with in life. And James tells them in verse 2, "Consider it all joy, my brethren, when you encounter various trials." James is not saying, look, brethren, it's just so much fun to have discouragement and trials in your life, so go out and find some. That's not what he's saying there. But what he is saying is, look, you have an opportunity to take a period of time or a place in your life where discouragement could happen and turn that into a period of joy. And he goes on. And he says in verse 3, "Knowing that the testing of your faith produces endurance, and let endurance have its perfect result, so that you may be perfect and complete, lacking nothing." Instead of looking at these times of trials, these times of difficulty, and just putting your head down and sulking and giving up, he says, look at it as an opportunity to strengthen yourself, to cause your faith to grow, rely more upon God, and overcome whatever the discouragement is in your life. God will not place upon us more than what we can handle. That is the promise that God has given to us. But we must rely upon Him. James says, count it all joy, understanding that we can fight against the discouragements that come our way, and we can become stronger on the other side. When you face trials, you have a choice. You can get discouraged, you can give up, where you can allow those trials to build you up and prepare you for what is still to come. You know, we mentioned Abraham Lincoln earlier in the lesson. Abraham Lincoln was born into poverty. He was faced with defeat throughout his life. He lost 8 elections. Twice he failed in business. He suffered a nervous breakdown. His mother died when he was 9 years old. He was engaged to be married, and his sweetheart died. History goes on to record that this broke his heart. And yet we know this is a man who persevered. And again, I do not believe that he has the relation, or he had the relationship that we have with our Lord and Savior and with our God. If man on his own can overcome these things, then what can we do with God on our side? How much can we overcome? What can we get through? How strong can we become knowing that God is with us? Even with these thoughts in mind and our knowledge of this, the devil is going to use discouragement on all of us. I believe it's one of his most useful tools against Christians. The devil had announced once upon a time that he was going out of business. He was going to retire from being the devil. And so what he was going to do was offer all of his diabolical inventions for sale to anyone who would pay the price. And on the day of the sale, all his tools were attractively displayed in spite of their ugliness. Malice, hatred, envy, jealousy, sensuality, deceit, and all the other instrumentalities of evil were spread out, each marked with its price. Apart from these others lay a plain wedge-shaped tool, which was worn, priced higher than any of the others. And someone asked the devil, "What is that tool?" "That's discouragement," was his reply. "Why have you priced that at such a high price for such a simple tool?" "Because," the devil answered, "it is more useful to me than any of the others. I can pry open and get inside a man's consciousness with that when I could not get near him with any of the others. And when once inside, I can use him in whatever way suits me best. It is much worn because I have used it on nearly everybody, yet few know that it belongs to me." The story goes on that it came to pass that the tool was never sold. The price was too high. And Satan still uses it on us today. How oftentimes have we found ourselves in trouble spiritually simply because at some point we got discouraged? And because we got discouraged, we allow other things to come into our life. Because I'm not doing as well as I need to be doing in one area, I kind of get down on myself. And because I'm already down, it seems easy to let other things entrap me and to pull me away from God. Because I'm discouraged, it's easy for me to say, "I just don't feel like it. I don't feel like doing those things that God would have me to do. I don't feel like assembling with the saints. I don't feel like talking to others about Jesus." And it all starts because simply we've become discouraged. Now again, we're not depressed. We're not somebody who's closed ourselves in at home. We're just not as zealous as maybe we once were. We're not as fervent to spread God's word or to stand for truth or to fight against Satan and all of his schemes. Discouragement happens to all of us. And we need to recognize it as a tool that Satan will constantly use against us. In Hebrews chapter 12, in verses 1 through 3, you have this Hebrew writer writing to Christians who are contemplating, well, let's just abandon Christianity. Let's abandon this Christ. And the thoughts have entered their mind of, well, it's just too difficult. It's just too hard. Have they not become discouraged? But the Hebrew writer tells them in chapter 11 about all the others who have come before them, about how they have stood against great odds, how they have faced certain death, how they have faced difficulty and trial. And the Hebrew writer in Hebrews chapter 12 tells him, you consider all those. Consider those. He starts off chapter 12 and verse 1 and says, "Therefore, since we have so great a cloud of witnesses surrounding us. Let us lay aside every encumbrance and the sin which so easily entangles us, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us. Much like what Paul would say, press on, keep going, strive for the goal. But notice what he says in verse 2. Fixing our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of faith, who for the joy set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and has sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. For consider him who has endured such hostility by sinners against himself, so that you will not grow weary and lose heart. Fix your eyes upon Jesus. Look at the way that he ran the race. Look at what he went through, what he overcame. For the longest time when I read this passage, I just thought about, well, he's telling us to look towards heaven. And Jesus is standing there at the finish line. And I don't think that's what it means. I think he's saying, fix your eyes on the way that he ran the race. Fix your eyes on the way that he endured, the discouragement he must have faced, the way in which there were those who tried to trip him up. And look at the way that he raced, and you race in the same way. The way in which he made strides, you make strides. The way in which he overcame, you overcome. Fix our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of faith. For the joy set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and has sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. He says, do not grow weary in verse 3. Do not lose heart. We must learn to look at Christ when we're discouraged. Think about all that he went through, all that he endured for you and for me. And when I compare that to what I go through, to what he goes through or went through, there's not a comparison. In 2 Corinthians chapter 4, in verses 8 through 10, Paul writes a passionate plea to these Corinthians. And it's much along the same line. Do not grow weary. Do not give up. Do not become discouraged. He tells them in 2 Corinthians chapter 4, beginning in verse 8, we are afflicted in every way, but not crushed. Perplexed, but not despairing. Persecuted, but not forsaken. Struck down, but not destroyed. Always carrying about in the body the dying of Jesus, so that the life of Jesus also may be manifested in our body. We have a saying, we may be down, but not out. Paul says, you know what? We are afflicted, but we're not crushed. They can't stop us. We may be perplexed, but not to the point of despairing. We are certainly persecuted, but is God not with us? We are struck down, but we're not to fear those who can destroy the body and not the soul. We have to remember who's on our side, who we're running the race for, and who we're running it with. And not allow the discouragement to stop us from doing the good in which God has asked us to do. It's easy many a times in our life to think about the circumstances we're in. You've probably been doing something good, and someone's taken it the wrong way. And someone's looked at the things that you do and they criticized it. Don't let that stop you from doing good. Continue to do good. Maybe you've been helping somebody who's been in need, and somebody's not appreciated the way in which you would have liked for them to appreciate. Don't let that discourage you. Don't let that stop you from helping others. Continue to do what God would want you to do. Maybe you've tried to teach the gospel to someone else, and they've never accepted what you've said. Maybe you've been rejected. Maybe you've been pushed away. Don't let that stop you from going out and teaching and preaching to others. Discouragement happens to all of us. We need to continue to press on. Look at what Jesus endured. Look at what the apostles endured. And press on. Have the courage to continue to do what God would have you to do. I think one of the things that we also need to be very mindful of, knowing that we all at different times in our life become discouraged, is we need to encourage the discouraged. There are times in our life where we need help and we don't get up very easily on our own. You remember when it was when you were young and you'd fall down and you just jump right back up and get going? Most of us aren't that way anymore. If we get down, we may be down for a while. We may need help. We may need a lot of help to get up. And it may take us days to get back to where we once were. We need to help one another. We need to recognize I've been discouraged, so certainly my brethren have been discouraged. We need to help one another out. You know, Abraham Lincoln, he needed encouragement. The night in which he was assassinated in Ford's Theater, he was carrying some different things on his body, on his person at that time. One of the things that he had was two pairs of glasses. He had a small velvet eyeglass cleaner. He also had an ivory pocket knife. He had a large handkerchief with A. Lincoln stitched in red. He had a tiny pencil, a brass sleeve button, a fancy watch fob, and a brown wallet with a Confederate $5 bill. But what he also had were 8 newspaper clippings that he had cut out and saved for years. All of those clippings praised him. He needed encouragement. We all do. There's not one of us who says, I've never been discouraged or I never will be discouraged. It comes to all of us. We need to comfort and help one another. Paul, in 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, and in verse 14, 1 Thessalonians chapter 5 and verse 14 says, we urge you, brethren, admonish the unruly, encourage the faint-hearted, help the weak, be patient with everyone. There are varying degrees at which we become discouraged. Some become discouraged and they're just not doing what's right. And they need admonishing. They need bringing back. But oftentimes it begins with some form of discouragement in their life. There are those who are just faint-hearted. They've grown weary and weak in doing what they need to be doing. And they need encouragement. They need help. But we need to be patient with all, understanding we all go through times of discouragement. And there are things in my life that discourage me that may not discourage you. There are things which are unique to the work of which I do that you won't face. Things that preachers face that are unique to them. And there are things that are unique to mothers that only mothers understand. And there are things to fathers that only fathers understand. And no matter where we are in our life, at what age we are, there are different things of which are discouragements to us. Things that tempt us, things that bring us down, things that cause us to question where we're going and our priorities in life. But we need to seek the help, and we need to help one another. In Romans chapter 8 and in verse 28, Romans chapter 8 and in verse 28, Paul tells the Christians at Rome, and we know that God causes all things to work together for good to those who love God, to those who are called according to His purpose. That verse oftentimes can become somewhat irritating. And let me explain what I mean. When things are not going right in our life, and yet our Christian brethren just tell us, don't worry, it'll all work out. When we're in the moment, we don't want to hear that. We want to hear what we're looking for. You know, we want to hear, well, this is the answer. This is what you need. But when we look back on it, how oftentimes do we look back and say, you know what, God had a plan in that. God helped me through that. What we have to do is become believers of what Paul has written. To understand that when my brother or my sister comes up and says, you know what, it will all work out. It'll all be okay. That I believe that truly God will cause these things to work out. So understand what I mean by sometimes it becomes irritating is because oftentimes we don't trust enough in God. And we don't put our faith in God enough. And we want to figure it all out for myself. And I want to be able to overcome this by myself with my own power, my own strength, my own skills. And I don't rely on God enough for these things. We must remind the discouraged and oftentimes remind ourselves that God is in control. And this may not seem the best at the time, but if we are faithful to God, God will be faithful to us. Things will work out. We will receive the reward that God has prepared for us. We must trust in God and trust that when things go wrong and things do not seem to be working out the way in which I would have written or I would have scripted, that God still has a plan in all of these things. During the Great Depression, there was a man whose business folded up. It caved in on him. And he sent a despairing note to the minister saying, "I've lost everything." And he begged him to come and commiserate with him. Well, the man of the gospel came at once. And he entered the door and he said, "I'm grieved indeed to learn of the death of your dear wife." "Oh, you must have misunderstood," the businessman said. "My wife is quite well. She is standing by me bravely and faithfully in this terrible misfortune." "Then," ventured his comforter, "I must express my sympathy because your sons have turned against you." "Certainly not. My sons have stood right beside me through all of this and have pledged every dollar that they can raise to help me out of it." "Oh, then, it must be your fair-weathered friends who have deserted you," said the clergyman. "How true is the old saying, a friend in need is a friend indeed." "Sir, let me tell you," replied the businessman, "I've never knew that I had so many true and loyal friends, ready and anxious to help me until this trouble came along." "Then, sir," said the minister, "I confess I don't understand how you could have lost everything. You are still vigorous in mind and body, and with an expectancy of many years of usefulness ahead of you. Your wife and your sons and friends are unstinting in their love, devotion, and loyalty to you. All that appears to have happened is that certain of your plans for accumulating money have been temporarily disrupted. So tell me, what do you mean by saying I've lost everything?" Sometimes we are our worst enemies. We look at the one or two things that have gone wrong and we fail to see all the other blessings that God blesses us with. All those who would stand beside us. All those who would take the shirt off their back to give to us if we were in need. To know that we have a spouse who's not going anywhere and standing beside us and who would do anything to encourage us and to help us out of the discouragement we're in. To know that we have children or parents who will do things. To know that we have brethren. You know what? We've been offended by brethren. We've been hurt by brethren. And we focus in on that. Instead of looking at the hundreds of other brethren we have who would do anything for us and who would always desire to be an encouragement to us. We need to see how God can help us rise above the discouragement. In this life, we will have discouragements. But if we will live faithfully, we can be assured that there is something better awaiting us when this life is over. We need to understand that God will never leave us, that He will never forsake us. As we become discouraged, we need to rely more heavily upon Him, not wander further from Him. We need to remember why we are here, what our focus is, and where we long to be when this life is over. Not get caught up in the physical, not get caught up in the here and the now, but long for what lies ahead. I want to leave you with these final thoughts this evening. In 1982, there was a football game being played in Badger Stadium in Madison, Wisconsin. There were more than 60,000 fans in attendance. The Wisconsin Badgers, the home team, they were losing. But out of the blue, during timeouts, when play was at a stop, the fans would jump up and roar with excitement. We would ask why. Many of those in the stadium were listening to a game being broadcast on the radio from 70 miles down the road. What they were listening to were the Milwaukee Brewers, the hometown team, beating the St. Louis Cardinals in Game 3 of the 1982 World Series. Their team was on the field and it was losing, but they were tuned in to something better down the road. In this life, even trying to live as Christians, there are going to be bad circumstances, times of discouragement, times when things don't seem to be going our way. We need to be tuned in down the road, longing for the home of which our God has prepared for us when this life is over. Stop being focused on today and look for what lies out in the future, what God has promised to us. Paul said in 2 Corinthians chapter 4, verses 16 through 18, "Therefore we do not lose heart, but though our outer man is decaying, yet our inner man is being renewed day by day. For momentary light affliction is producing for us an eternal weight of glory, far beyond all comparison. While we look not at the things which are seen, but at the things which are not seen, for the things which are seen are temporal, but the things which are not seen are eternal." Paul's focus was down the road. Paul went through so much affliction. If his thoughts, if his mindset or his focus was only on today, the here and the now, think about all that he endured, the beatings, the imprisonments, the shipwreck, the stoning, all the things that he went through. If his focus was just on the here and the now, think of the discouragement that he would have faced. But because he looked at this as momentary light affliction, he understood what lied ahead of him. He was able to endure. He was able to press on and be an encouragement to those who were around him. Tonight, maybe you are discouraged. Maybe you're suffering loss. Maybe you're hurting in some way. Understand you have a God who loves you and who wants to provide you a home in heaven when this life is over. If these discouragements have caused you to be unfaithful to Him, we hope this evening that you will change. We hope that you will redirect your life in such a way that you'll be pleasing to Him as you live from day to day. Maybe these things have caused you to fall and to stumble and to sin, and you need to make some things right. We're ready to help you and assist you with those things. Or maybe you realize that part of your discouragement is that you don't have anybody to help you along life's journey. And you've not committed yourself to your Lord and to your Savior. And you know the encouragement, you know the strength that will come through walking with Him. If you're ready to submit to His will in baptism, you're ready to begin that walk with Him and have someone who will never leave you and forsake you, to have brethren who will encourage you because they know the difficulty of walking this Christian life, then we encourage you to come. Whatever your wish be, however we can help you, won't you come while we stand and while we sing?
Oh, Father, I do say.